Hello, awesome people. Welcome to Embrace the Pivot. I'm Dr. C. Robinson, your host for the show. Join me as we discover what pivoting actually means and how you can embrace your pivot during life's transition. Happy Wednesday, everyone. I hope all of you are having a fantastic week. Today's guest, Clayton Durant, has a really interesting story of how when the pandemic hit and he works in the music industry, he had to find a way to serve his clients when touring came to a massive halt. And for the majority of artists or musicians, touring is how they make a bulk of their money. So he had to figure out a way to serve his clients, still grow his business, and pivot. I want to jump right into his story, but before I do, a little bit more background on him. He is a marketing and music industry entrepreneur with expertise in social strategy, entertainment marketing, music management, and brand partnerships. Currently, he serves as the director of emerging media at Mike Worldwide, while simultaneously advertising CAD, CAD Management, a music and entertainment consulting firm, which he founded in 2016. He is also an adjunct professor at NYU's Clive Davis Schools of Recorded Music and Long Island University's Roc Nation School of Music and Sports Management. He has a really cool story. Can't wait for you guys to hear it. Everyone, please welcome Clayton.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. This is really cool to be connecting like this.
Yeah. All right. You have had an amazing career in music behind the scenes. So what I would like to know is what has been your biggest career pivot within the industry?
I think the biggest career pivot that I've had certainly has come during the COVID pandemic. Most people probably know or may not know is that when COVID hit, particularly for artist management companies, it really took a heavy toll because most of the revenue that comes from recording artists happens to sit in touring, right? So any artist that is at any stage, whether they're early in their infancy or whether you're Bruce Springsteen and you're doing, you know, the highest echelon stadiums, over 75% of all of an artist's revenue sit in live music, right? So during that time, you couldn't tour for about a year and a half, let's call it, close to two, but you know, about a year and a half. Particularly that first year was really, really tough, right? And you didn't have that extra set of revenue. So for a company like ours, where we only had six or seven artists that we were managing who were at the mid-level stages, it was extremely important that we had them on the road and had them doing shows like any other artist. But because our business had relied so heavily on, you know, that anticipated money coming in, we had, you know, really financial troubles because we couldn't figure out a really solid way to make up for that ancillary revenue that just wasn't there anymore. So the pivot that had to happen was, you know, we understood that we couldn't tour. We tried virtual touring, doing live shows virtually. The margins just weren't there unless you were BTS or Justin Bieber or someone of, you know, the really high superstar status. But what we ended up doing was a couple things. One is we initially struck a cool partnership at the time with a company called Movers and Shakers. They do a lot of advertising and creative work, but we work with them to A&R artists to help them develop original songs for brands for TikTok. And this was before, wow, kind of as TikTok started to really balloon and become kind of like the app that everyone kind of sees it as now. So we turned a lot of the artists that we were working on traditionally in building their careers and literally turned them into brand writers for songs, which was a really great move because that made up a lot of revenue that was being missed
Yeah.
from like, the touring perspective. The second thing that we ended up doing was a good pivot in terms of where we are today as a company is we met with SoundCloud, which for those of you who don't know is one of the largest streaming platforms in the world. From a musical standpoint, they are definitely one of more of the legacy platforms. So many amazing artists have broken through their network. And they had come to us and they were looking to find joint partners to develop A&R pipelines. So essentially what that means is we would operate as our management entity and distribute all of our music and all of our artists' content through their distribution platform, which is called Repost, and work with their SoundCloud internal team, both from getting a resources standpoint, as well as their personnel and getting additional people in the door to help develop the artists that we had on our roster. And we became one of the first four companies in SoundCloud's history to do an A&R partnership with a streaming service.
Wow.
And it really set a different paradigm for what independent artists could A, structurally make their deals, right? Because most people were going and doing deals with your typical distribution companies, whether that was CD Baby, TuneCore, AWOL at more of like the higher white glove status, or they were going after your traditional record labels like Atlantic or Def Jam or Sony or whoever it may have been. There just wasn't a structure at that time where, you were actually essentially working with a management company that had a distribution deal with a streaming service. And that set into motion a whole new way to think about how to A, release your music, but then also B, structure a deal with an unconventional entity that necessarily wasn't looked at as a place where you wanted to house all of your distribution infrastructure. So those were the two really big pivots that made a really big tactical difference in the way that CAD management is perceived in the market today. I'll also say this about the SoundCloud thing, and this is again very serendipitous in the way that it happened, was I was on Clubhouse when Clubhouse was really like the thing that everybody was on, and I literally ended up meeting the head of A&R on at SoundCloud through Clubhouse. And it
Wow.
was so random. And we were just chatting back and forth. And he had literally brought us into the fold just because I had met him on Clubhouse. And he was like, "Man, like what you guys are doing is really interesting, really cool. Send me the artists that you're working on." And then all of a sudden I found ourselves, striking a deal with SoundCloud thanks to the beautiful connectivity that happened during that short, brief, but amazing Clubhouse era.
Is that still a thing? I don't even know.
I don't know if Clubhouse is as much of a thing. I'm sure they still have people that go on there, but I'm telling you, there was about 7 to 10 months where Clubhouse was the thing that everybody was spending hours on.
Yeah. So at any point during this time, because it was so unconventional, because it was never done before, did you ever second guess yourself or question, what am I doing? Or was it more of a just let's go for it and try
Well,
it?
I'll tell you what was really helpful. When we were putting the SoundCloud deal together and we had gotten the paperwork over, I was actually getting my master's from NYU in music business at the exact same time. So everything that I was going through from a structural class perspective was actually being implemented at the exact same time that we were navigating through that deal. So being looking at that deal through the educational lens was also really, really, really helpful. And I have to say, like, without you know, my amazing professors at NYU. I have to shout out Larry Miller and a few others who really, you know, made an impact on me. The way that they taught us how to look at these deals was really instrumental into the way that I looked at the SoundCloud proposition and the reason why we, you know, leaned into it. Sure, was there a little timidness perhaps around, you know, what are we doing? You know, how are we going to make this work in a COVID environment? Sure. But we had already lost our entire touring business. So I figured we're not really going down much more than, you know, not being able to tour for the next year, whatever it was at that time. We just felt like SoundCloud was this under-leveraged brand where every piece of SoundCloud's ecosystem was all about finding the super fan. So if you're like on SoundCloud, you really care about the artist. You care about the new music. You care about the development of the artist and the journey that they're having. And we just felt like there was something so special about the brand of SoundCloud that just didn't exist on any other streaming platform. I mean, when you think historically of what SoundCloud is, I mean, they've broken so many of the most important artists in our era today. And I think sometimes people forgot that. And when we looked at the deal and we looked at what SoundCloud was and the history that it had and the huge collective fan base of people that use that platform, and just the amazing people that are at SoundCloud. I mean, they care about music. They don't just care about, you know, making a record pop. They really care about the actual artists and development and building fan bases. That was just all of that together really made me look at this and say, this is what we need to do. We need to go and work with these people because they see the lens, they see the world of music through the same lens that we did. And there was just that really beautiful synergy at that time.
So a lot of people don't realize that touring is such a big part of an artist's revenue. So could you share an example, like a hypothetical example of the breakdown of how they could make more money touring versus selling records or singles?
Yeah. So, I mean, when you look at the dispersion of money for any size artist, right, it always comes down to the fact that streaming is about a scalability game, right? So to really make a lot of money in streaming, you need a lot of activity. So in the past, you know, you may have been able to sell 1,000 albums at $10 and make $10,000, but no one's buying albums in that way anymore. They're cherry picking songs, and they're also cherry picking songs through a streaming ecosystem. Now, every time a stream occurs, a couple of royalties are generated, but across all those different royalties, whether you're the songwriter or the artist, you're getting paid, you know, pennies on the dollar. We're talking fractions of a penny. And, you know, if you have a lot of activity, those fractions of a penny add up quite quickly. The problem is that when you look at the recorded music space, most of the consumption happens within the top 1% of artists. So what I mean by that is that Drake or Taylor Swift, they control most of the consumption for what's happening from a recorded music and side, but the indie artist is kind of left with whatever else is available, which isn't that much shelf space. So you're put in a situation where most artists aren't really making much money, if any money at all, from streaming. So now when you look at the touring side, the margins are just a lot bigger, right? They're not huge, but they're just bigger, right? So you can go into a 300 cap room, let's call it SOBs in New York City, sell 10 tickets at 300, you know, at a 300 cap rate, and, you know, gross out $3,000. Let's say you have $1,000 of expenses on that show. You've made $2,000 off of that one show. And to get that exact same $2,000 that you would have gotten off of that one show, you would have had to yield maybe 1 million streams on one song. Mm. So it's really the economics of it. That's why touring is just such a critical part of every artist's business. It really just kind of comes down to the fact that the person who buys a ticket, the margins on those tickets are just much better than your typical margins on streaming activity, just because most independent and mid-level artists aren't necessarily making the kind of streaming volume that you need to actually make it a profitable venture. And that's no fault of anybody's. Truthfully, it's just the fact of the reality of the attention economy, right? There's so much music in the market that it's really tough to have a record that actually hits a million stream threshold. Because, I've seen the latest data from Spotify. They're saying that there's 100,000 songs that are coming onto streaming services every day. So that means by the time that the week ends, there'll be close to a million new songs that are available on streaming services. And by the time that the month ends, you're talking about 2 or 3 million new songs. So no one has the time or the bandwidth to go through all of that. And you're not just fighting in music. For those who don't know, I actually teach both at the NYU Clive Davis School of Recorded Music and LIU's Roc Nation School of Music and Sports Management. And I tell my students this all the time. I say, we're not in the music business, we're in the attention economy business.
I
So,
like that.
your podcast, has to yield and drive attention. The Netflix show is taking attention. The book is taking attention. Our music is taking attention. We're all in the same pot. So, how do we kind of step out of not just the music ecosystem, but also the content ecosystem and say, you know what, our record and what we're doing is worth, your time more so than maybe watching the entertaining cat video that's on TikTok. And when you add all of that together, that's really why the economics of streaming is complicated, because it's great in terms of scalability, but you're also putting it's also in a bucket of the attention economy amongst all these other things, where if you go into touring and you buy that ticket, you're not likely just buying the ticket. If you're a real super fan, you're also going to buy merchandise, which adds into the overall line items of driving more profitable shows. So adding all these things together, touring is just such a critical component, which is why so many artists struggled during COVID without that source of revenue, to the point where the Grammy's 501c3 Music Cares Foundation actually set up a fund to not only help people who are employed in the touring economy, but also the artists who couldn't tour. So it is complicated, but at the end of the day, touring just yields just better margins more times than not than your typical streaming rate.
How has your leadership style evolved over the years?
I mean, I'll say in the early days when I started CAD, we did it in a dorm room at Roger Williams University. And no, this is actually not even a joke. It was me and a friend, and we didn't really know what we were doing. So I really felt like I had to learn all these skills and be an expert at everything and try and handle every piece of every ask that came in from our earliest clients. And what I found later is that the best way to scale is to find amazing talent, develop that talent, and let their speciality skills shine, and don't micromanage them. I can tell you from CAD's history of people who have come in and worked at the firm, one of my biggest accomplishments is watching them leave the firm and then go to a major company. That actually shows me that A, we've done our job in terms of mentorship. B, that the things that they're learning here are allowing them to succeed and work at the top companies, in our business. Thirdly, it also makes me realize that we're really good at picking talent, right? So we're not just trying to pick musical talent. I'm also trying to pick creative and corporate talent that can help elevate our artists and our roster. And we're really good at that. And that has been probably the biggest way that my leadership style has changed is it's not necessarily about, you know, me doing all the work or me, you know, having to have the face of all of this. I want all of our people, whether they're the youngest interns to some of our mid-level managers, to be able to come in and really have ownership over what they're doing. And we try and make the organization as flat as possible so that everybody has an opportunity to really feel like A, they contributed, but B, they also made an impact on what the artist's overall vision is. And what you'll start to realize is that if you can help align, you know, what these people's end goals are, because most times their end goals is not to stay and, you know, work with us forever. Most of the time it is to use us as a launching pad, which I completely understand. So if I know that and I'm like, okay, maybe you want to get to work at Universal, maybe you want to go work at a major talent agency, how can I use the time that you're here to help you get there and align that alongside what the artist vision goals are, along with what the company goals are? And that's how my leadership style has changed. I really try and take a holistic look of everybody's values and what really makes them tick, and try and pull those levers so that everybody can win across all the areas that they care most about. And the type of quality work that you get from that is really unprecedented. And that's truly what allowed a small company like ours to even have an opportunity to partner with a company as big as SoundCloud, is literally just in the same, it is literally in the fact that we put such an emphasis on that balance between our artists, our people, and the company goals, and never tried to make one bigger than the other. And this entire time, everything's been able to rise almost at an equilibrium level. And it's made us pretty successful for our size. And I have to say, I don't see a lot of companies, you know, maybe doing that. And that's something that I think other companies should explore, because they have to know, like, most people don't want to stay at the same company forever. And that's okay. Think about all these different stakeholders and what they value, and try and create a way that everybody wins at the end, and that they can kind of see their goals and visions kind of come to fruition.
Yeah. And that also ties into networking, right? Because if they have a good experience with you, and then they move on to the other companies, you can always reach out to them too when you need a favor or looking for something. So I think that type of leadership really helps you too in the future.
Yeah. And that's the best part. Like I had an intern, Alex, and he came to us from one of the city schools in New York City. It was his first music internship ever, and he was such a creative kid. It was unbelievable what he was creating. We helped polish the direction of how he was creating, and like taught him what sort of assets and things really worked well in music. And he was able to take the experience that he had from his time at CAD, and he ended up getting a job at 300 Entertainment, which is Megan Thee Stallion's record label. And really has now flourished there. He's worked on a variety of different things for Megan, has worked on a variety of different projects for a lot of the top artists over at 300. And it just amazes me, like, man, like, you know, I remember when you were just an intern and you came to work with us, and now I see all of your designs and posts all over the place. And it really is just amazing. And that's the value that I think, is just so critical, is you have to overly care about not just like the work quality and the work-life balance, but also what are the goals of the people that you have in your organization. Really take the time to learn those, because if you do take the time and you're able to create a path to say, we are doing this project for this artist, and I know that you want to do X, let me show you how this project for this artist can lead you to X. Mm-hmm. The passion and the work is just so much better, because you're able to show that, like, hey, we're not trying to just, suck up your worker energy. We're just part of your path to help you get there.
Yeah.
And that's a different value proposition than I think, than what other companies may offer.
Are there any projects that you're working on that you would like to talk about?
I'm doing a couple things. First is we have a column in Adweek called Beats, Bites, and Brands, which I'm really excited about. It's with my good friend, colleague, and coworker, Jesse Kirschbaum, who's an amazing music and brand executive of his own. And we started this great series where we look at the conversion between music and brands. And we've been writing some really exciting articles, just kind of covering that space from a high level macro perspective. So that's something really exciting. I'm also working now at Mike Worldwide, which is a full service public relations and marketing agency based in New York City. We're just doing a ton of great work in terms of building a really new digital foundation. We launched an initiative called the Platform Fluency Initiative, where we're looking at all the platforms that exist in the ecosystem today, really breaking them down, trying to figure out like what makes them tick, and really reimagine, what sort of digital activations can be done for Mike Worldwide's broad array of different clients. And lastly, I found a great love for teaching this past year. I got a chance to start my teaching and professor career off at NYU's Clive Davis School of Recorded Music. I was given an amazing opportunity this spring to also go and teach at the Long Island School, the Rock Nation School of Music and Sports Management at Long Island University. And, I think really investing in the next generation of, music and entertainment and marketing executives is critical. So all of those things together are just, some of the things I'm working on that I'm excited about. And, just keep an ear out for some new music and artists that we're looking to break from CAD side, So hopefully it'll hit streaming services and hit your playlist soon.
Very cool. And congratulations on the teaching. I taught a couple years ago and it's rewarding. I learned from my students just as much as they learned from me. So congratulations.
Yeah, 100%. I go into all these lectures, and because the music business is such a young person's business and really connecting with the youth is, absolutely critical. I almost find that I think I teach them half the time, then they teach me half the time. And it really is a beautiful balance and something that, I didn't know that I'd love, and it just kind of, fell in my lap. So totally hear that.
And where can my listeners find you on social media?
Yeah. So I'm on LinkedIn. You can just type in Clayton Durant. That's Clayton Durant on LinkedIn. You can find me on Instagram at it's at Clayton_Durant_. You can find me on Twitter and some other platforms as well. Definitely check out the writing. Adweek, I'm going to be starting a couple of other columns that I'm excited about. So, if you follow me on LinkedIn, I post all the time there. So, you can keep up to date on my work there.
Yeah. I'll drop a link in the description so they can find it easily.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah. Thank you so much for your time. I really enjoyed learning more about what you do in the music industry.
Yeah, really appreciate the time, and hope all your listeners, took something valuable away.
You can follow me, Dr. C, on Instagram at embracethepivot. I hope all of you embrace your pivot.